Okay, it is 1 o'clock on July 13th, 2023. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Public Service Commission, joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugen-Hoffert and Julie Fedorchek, so we have a quorum. This is an informal hearing regarding Otter Tail Power Company's Luverne Wind upgrade. It's our case number PU-23-176. And I want to emphasize this being an informal hearing. It involves only undisputed facts. If any disputed things arise, we will have to wrap this up and issue a notice for a formal hearing. The first thing I want to do is go around the room and using the microphones, if everybody would introduce themselves. And I think it's helpful if you also remind us what it is that you do.
Rob Frank, staff.
Victor Shook with Commission staff.
Bryce Haugen, energy supply for Otter Tail Power Company.
Molly Smith with Frederickson and Byron, outside counsel.
Lisa McFarlane, inside counsel for Otter Tail.
Chris Hansen, staff.
Lorna Meidinger, State Historical Society.
Randy Sinstelin with Otter Tail Power Company.
Lauren Donofrio, in-house counsel, but application pending for the state of North Dakota.
Judy Olson, Otter Tail Power Company.
Could you guys over there kind of remind us your roles?
I'm manager of development activities with Otter Tail Power.
I'm associate general counsel for regulatory, and so I'm sure I will be seeing you many times in the future. But as of now, I have a pending application for admission to practice here in North Dakota. So I will be sitting over here and not putting an appearance on any records until that's granted. Thank you.
I am business specialist.
Okay, we will get started, and the first thing we start with the applicants. So go ahead, and you have some handouts laying on the tables here, and the slideshow. I assume they're the same. And so
yes,
go ahead, whoever wants to take over.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, commissioners and staff. Thanks for having us here this afternoon to discuss the Luverne Repower Project. We appreciate the materials before you. One is the staff memo, which is a nice, concise way for our 80-page application. It summarizes it well, so we appreciate that from Robert. And then also the slide deck in front of you summarizes the certification and amendment request. And just a couple brief comments before we get into the summary of the request and the type of work that'll be done is that we're seeking to be good stewards of all the resources that we have in our generation fleet. And this work is a way to improve our existing fleet and increase energy output at a facility that's run really well for us over the last just about 15 years. And we'll do that by taking better advantage of the great wind resource in central eastern North Dakota and Steele County. Luverne is a 33 turbine, 49.5 megawatt facility, and we'd be looking to complete this equipment change out in Q2 of 2025, so beginning when road restrictions come off in May of 2025. And with that, I'll pass it over to Molly to summarize the request and what's in the application.
So if we look on the second slide, this is very similar to what we submitted for Langdon. We have the certification that was filed documenting compliance with the statutory requirements. And as far as appendices, we have the acoustic assessment and results in A. Shadow flicker assessment is B, and we did include the worst case data that you had requested previously for this one at the end of Appendix B. And I should know that A has two sound waivers in it as well. The FAA filings are don't have the DNHs yet, but have the ASNs that were filed assigned for the filings for the FAA determinations of no hazard. The microwave beam path analysis, class one cultural report, and an unanticipated discoveries plan, the IPAC resource list, and agency correspondence. And then we do have an amendment request because although this will not change the overall output, this is changing from a 1.5 megawatt turbine to a 1.6 simply because that's the available technology. And so based on past precedents, we're asking for the megawatt limitations to be removed from the applicable orders and the certificates.
Moving on to slide three, the Laverne upgrades will take place, as I mentioned, beginning in May of 2025 after road restrictions are off. The component replacement work is expected to take about 2 months. The construction schedules are still to be set for the civil work, but we expect that that work would likely be completed in the fall of 2024 in preparation for the spring of 2025 equipment replacement. And all of the equipment replacements are above tower. On figure two, this is on slide number four, provides just a couple illustrations on the 82.5 current diameter increasing to a 97 meter rotor diameter. The figure and picture show the tower, nacelle, hub, and blades. And again, on those pictures, the tower and the nacelle stay the same. The main component that you'll see would be the change to the hub and the blades. Does it move into the illustration on the following page?
Bryce?
Yes.
Could I have a question on that, on the previous slide, actually. The bullet up on top that says 20% more energy generated annually. Are you able to provide kind of a cost benefit then on this in terms of the new investment, the increased efficiency? It feels sort of, I feel a little uneasy in these projects kind of with companies going through this huge investment to get kind of the same nameplate, almost the same nameplate capacity out of it. I realize that's the setup that we have, but when I see 20% more energy generated, then that helps me understand that. And I also know you get the BTCs for another 10 years, but I would hate to see a production tax credit extension kind of being the main driver of these, where we're spending all this money putting on new blades for about the same energy impact just to get 10 more years of production tax credits and seeing that kind of a policy being implemented all across the country. So how could we get a figure that helps me better understand the cost benefit of the investment?
Sure.
Tax credits aside.
Yeah. So one of the things with the 20% additional energy, it's not that it hits that 49.5 more frequently, it's that it moves the curve up, so we're more often getting closer to that 49.5.
Right.
And with Molly had mentioned, we had the Langdon repowering siting application before you that was approved on June 6th. We also have two other GE facilities that looking to request and repower as well. And so from an energy perspective, repowering these four facilities, 131 turbines, is the equivalent, it'll produce the equivalent energy of a 40 megawatt facility with a 50% net capacity factor. So it's just shy of 200 gigawatt hours additional energy across the four projects. And so
go ahead.
I was just going to say, in addition to these component replacements helps maximize the life of the existing facilities because of in the illustration, upgrades to bearings and the couplings and things that get replaced as part of the repower process helps extend the life and maximize the life of the facility and ensures that it goes is working and going forward as well.
And so would there be a way for you to quantify that with, like, the total investment, not including the tax credits, additional to just, like, the flat capital costs, and then compared to the increased efficiency power generated over time, like, how do the and then show me a cost benefit like that? Could you do that?
Yes, and I think we would, so we would do that certainly when we would seek cost recovery, either through a rider
right.
or a rate case. And it yep. is something that could be compiled. I'm trying to think through the...
I don't necessarily need it as it relates to this siting application, because I'm not trying to suggest that it ties to these factors, because it doesn't. But I just was thinking about this as I'm reading all of this, like, what is driving all of, I've read all of your applications all at once, and I was like, this is a lot, what's driving all of this, really. So I just want to better understand that so I can, you know, filter these policies correctly.
Do you want a commissioner as a side piece of information provided to you, or do
sure.
you want, versus a formal?
It doesn't need to be part of this record, but I
okay.
would like to have it. And have the company commit to providing it.
Sure, sure. Yes, we can
okay.
do that. Yeah.
Thank you. That would be great.
And she's not the only one who would like it, so I presume it would be
yeah.
all three of us. But I guess, you know, I just assumed that the point is to get the PTC site. It wasn't quite as generous as you would.
Assumptions. Would you like it sooner or as part of their next renewable filing?
The rider filing?
Right.
Which would be next year?
Come late on. This fall?
It'd be about November 15, probably, that the renewable rider annual update filing would be submitted.
That would work, and then maybe you could
that.
Do it per project.
Yes.
Yeah. That would work for me anyway.
Yes, we will do that.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to say that Congress should see that too, but I don't think they actually think about these things.
So then continue.
Thank you. Then this illustration I think is it was helpful for me as we're working through this part of the process of what actually gets changed out as part of the repower. And so this shows a replacement schedule, the inside of the hub and the inside of the nacelle. From the left, we have the hub and then the nose cone spinner and pitch drives. And those all will be replaced to help hold the new blades and accommodate the larger blades. As you go up across the top, there's a rotor shaft, there's main bearings that get replaced as part of this equipment replacement for that. The oil cooler that's replaced to work with the new gearbox. The gearbox is replaced as well. That coupling that puts the gearbox and the generator together, that also is replaced. The heat exchanger gets refurbished, and then as you go across the bottom, then those pitch drives, again, in the hub, there's three of those. Those each will be replaced. All the bearings are replaced for the bearing bracket, and then the generator is refurbished as part of the process here for the component replacements. I'm realizing that my eyes are just on the verge of getting terrible enough that I can barely read those right now, so I need to pull up the glasses. Any questions on that replacement of components?
More of a curiosity question. Do you have staff on hand that will do the replacement, that does the replacement? Or is that contracted service?
Yeah, it'll be a contracted service with General Electric. who likely will, I mean, they'll subcontract it out to another party that will do the work. Our Otter Tail employees will be on site and certify or confirm once each of the repowers is done, and will be part of the safety program as those guys are all on site as well. Next week we'll have General Electric on site. There's three of those individuals from the construction group that are coming, and we'll be touring all of the turbines at the Laverne facility as well as the other couple facilities. So that's a big milestone for the project to start looking at what type of civil things need to be done, and then putting together the work plan for completing these. Again, this Laverne is in Q2 of 2025.
This is another one of those that doesn't really have much to do with this decision, but when you're just explaining those details, it got me wondering. I assume when you're doing all that, you lift this whole thing down onto the ground and do that, and then replace all these things, and then lift it back up, right?
There'll be cranes that will take the existing hub off, and the new hub would go up with the cranes. And so each of the sites will have the crane was what will do that with the hub. No change to that. The nacelle doesn't come off.
Okay. If when one is just out there operating and needs something, just something goes wrong in the gearbox or something, does all that get lifted down, or do you just take the right parts up there and fix things up in the air?
I'll need to defer to Harvey. Did Harvey jump onto the call here, if he's available to talk about? That's a little bit out of my depth for the operations side or the actual construction component.
And I don't need to know now either, or if no one knows it's here.
Very rarely would a piece of equipment be moved down. Okay. And that's for a variety of reasons. Safety and stability of the foundation and the base. So once you get that up there, it needs to remain secure and stable.
Thank you.
So I have another question. You know, you went through what you replaced, you know, the blades and all that, but you say the tower doesn't need to be replaced. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. I mean, as far as that, I would think, I didn't know. I mean, I was just pausing when, you know, with all the upgrades and moving towards that, which is great, that the base and towers and all that can hold that.
That's a pretty significant portion of the evaluation that's done engineering study-wise. There's a mechanical loads analysis that's uh-huh. performed by General Electric to ensure, because they want to ensure that the life of the tower is 20 years plus after right. the repower. And so that mechanical loads analysis is part of the engineering. We also do a foundation analysis. That's Otter Tail does the foundation analysis to ensure that the existing foundations are appropriate.
Well, that's very good to know. Thank you.
So to your question on or answer to Randy, the hub is just the nose that comes down. The rest of that stays up, and all the changes that are made within the nacelle happen up in the tower.
That's correct. The front portion, that what's listed as the spinner and the rotor hub, that does get replaced. So that existing will come down, and then the new will be put up.
Got it. Cool. Thank you.
I also just want to mention that now that I know I don't have a phone-a-friend on the internet, I'm a little bit more nervous than I was before. I thought I had these guys called in that were going to help me out here.
What about the recycling of the blades? Can you talk about that a bit?
Yes. Those, as part of our contract with GE, we will get a certification that the blades will be cut down on site for transportable loads and brought to be reused at another facility. Right now, the expectation is that they'd be used for part of a concrete reuse, but the contract doesn't require that that's how it's reused. And so one of the other parts of it is it'll start worrying about cutting these things up and having shards and things in the ground. That's part of the contract as well, that those are all contained and moved offsite and reused in the future, so they won't end up in a landfill.
Thank you.
Is that the same contractors for Langdon And you, do you think it'll be consistent with all these projects?
Yes, we do. Yes. The Laverne wind location and layout. This is our 33 turbine layout at Laverne. It was commissioned in 2009. Once these upgrades are complete, the facility will still operate at 49.5 megawatts. There'll be no change to the generator interconnect, nor the underground collection or the substation. And this, as we just talked about a little bit earlier, the work allows the turbines to produce power near that 49.5 megawatt interconnect more often, which results in more energy. Move on to slide 7, unless there's questions on 6. We have a contract in place. This is different from when we were here at the end of April. At the end of April, when we were here for Langdon, we had not had a contract in place, but we do have that in place now with GE. For the upgrades, there's certain criteria to be met to continue moving forward. And this proceeding in front of you today and your approval is an important part of that process to get these projects to fulfillment. We expect the blades will be manufactured in North Dakota. The increased energy will increase the state taxes paid. That's a portion of there's a property tax component associated with the energy produced at the facilities. So that will increase. And then the upgrades, again, will maximize the useful life and reduce costs long term.
So on the next slide, which is 8, it talks about the compliance with North Dakota Century Code Section 49-2203-3A. So this upgrade project is wholly within the designated project site. As Bryce discussed, it improves the existing energy generation technology. It complies with the current exclusion area and avoidance area requirements, including turbine setbacks, as discussed in the associated Exhibit A and in the certification. There are two property line setback waivers that Otter Tail is seeking, and we're asking for approval of the variance conditioned on providing copies of those waivers. And if the waivers aren't obtained, those turbines or the affected turbines would not be repowered. On the sound requirement, we've submitted a sound report that demonstrates compliance. We have two waivers currently. They're participating landowners, and those were provided. There's a third that we obtained since the filing, so there are actually three. The report itself shows, though, that the project can meet the sound requirement at all locations, even if those additional waivers are not obtained. So basically, using sound reduction technology can ensure the 45 dBA within 100 feet is met. Once we've determined all the waivers that will be obtained, we'll file copies of those in an updated report, because by that point we'll know, you know, what turbines we actually need to use the sound reduction technology on.
Follow up on the sound reduction technology? Does that technology have a negative effect on the project at all? Is it more expensive than the others? I'm just kind of trying to understand, why don't you just use that if it creates less sound?
There is a cost associated with putting it's a serrated blade that is put on to reduce the sound. There is a cost associated with that. It does not impact the annual energy production with just the serrated blade. But in a case of a noise-reducing operation, that could lower the annual energy production a little bit if that were required.
What is the percent increase in cost, approximately?
I'll help you out here, Bryce. our current contracted price, if we elect that technology, is about $12,000 per turbine.
More?
Yes.
Okay.
$12,000
$12,000
per turbine. So that's for three blades that are serrated.
Yes.
Okay. And have you used those quite a bit already in other facilities?
No, we have not.
Do they look? Can you see a difference from the ground in how they look?
I don't know that you can see the difference from the ground. We've seen pictures of them, and they look kind of neat, like the back of a fish. You know, how the fins come through, so you can see them a little bit across there, but it's not significantly different. I suppose on the picture, it's close enough you can sort of see the edges on it.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the back of a sunfish, the back fin.
Yeah, and so how much does it reduce the sound or the noise?
Yeah, the low noise trailing edges is, it varies depending on where it's at, but it's 1 to 2 dB is roughly what it would reduce for the noise trailing edge.
Okay, so you must be really close to the threshold on these.
Yeah, all of these were below 50, I think, the first time they were run. So below 50, and then it was just the incremental difference of the 45 to 49, 48 for the high.
Hmm. Okay. All right, thank you.
As well as the sound, there is a shadow flicker analysis that was completed. There are no occupied receptors that are above 30 hours per year, and the cultural and wetland avoidance are also met. The activities are going to take place within previously surveyed disturbed areas. Like approximately 98-99% of the area was previously surveyed, and everything that'll be done will be within areas that were previously disturbed by the original construction. And so it also complies with the commission's orders. Any different setback commitments that were made are noted in the Exhibit A, and those are also met.
I have a follow-up on this.
Okay.
So on the cultural and wetland avoidance areas, in your application, both in kind of like the summary, the certification by Mr. Tollerson, and then in the Exhibit A, the company references that Chabot has recommended completion of the architectural history survey of the vicinity of the wind, and then basically says that Otter Tail plans to complete this survey for this upgraded project. We've got the letter, I'm sure you've seen it too, from the SHPO, and Lorna's here to talk about this as well. We haven't, as far as I know, gotten any information on that, so just want to know what the status of that is and where the company is on that request.
Yes, and this is, I'm glad that you brought that up. So we talked about this a little bit at the Langdon informal of the request to perform the study, or the study that was requested from SHPO. And from Otter Tail's perspective, we would, if the commission would like us to complete the study, we would do it. And if you don't want us to complete the study, we wouldn't do it. The cost for this Laverne project would be about $50,000 to complete the study that was requested. And that would be done by a third party. It would be like a Metcalf or a Centerpoint, or I mean, there's a few parties that could do that type of work. And my understanding is that those parties have visited with SHPO about what the requirements would be, so we'd be ensured if you chose to have us do that, that we would fulfill what would be needed.
Okay. Well, so because there's a number of these projects, and the SHPO has reached out to us. Victor and I sat down with SHPO just to better understand what it is they're looking for. And our collaborative relationship with agencies is super important to us. They have expertise that we don't, so we have to, you know, work kind of hand in hand to make sure that we're understanding and doing our best to acknowledge the expertise that's out there that the legislature has requested and required that we consult with. So I'm not 100% comfortable after talking with them that I think that you guys know exactly what they're looking for. And maybe there might be some value to all of us better understanding, whether that's today and Lauren is here and able to kind of talk about what they're seeking with this additional study, where it came from, this requirement, et cetera, and how, you know, if there are issues that are identified, what would then happen as a result. So I think it might be helpful, but Randy, your chair, I defer to your preference on how you'd like to pursue this information.
So I'm just looking at your slides, the paper copy, looking ahead. It appears to me like you're probably about done. I don't know if you have other points beyond this you'd like to make. I was very glad to see Lauren in the room and hope that maybe we can have you come up and make some comments. For the, one of the things that I'm not 100% sure of, to what level this is a desire by SHPO as opposed to maybe an administrative rule or something that then it just kind of is what it is. And so I'd be curious about that. But if you had any other details on other topics that you wanted to wrap up first, we could do that before asking her to comment.
There are no other items that we plan to cover.
Lauren, are you willing to do that?
Turn your mic.
I'll just reiterate, I'm Lauren Meininger. I work in the State Historical Society, dual hat, State Historic Preservation Office, as well as State Historical Society. So State Historical Society when we're talking state regulations. I am the coordinator for the projects that fall under the connection with the Public Service Commission. So we do publish guidelines and on how to do cultural resource inventory projects, and those are published on our website, readily available. All your cultural consultants have seen it. They've sworn they did when they got their permit, all that good stuff. For wind turbine projects specifically, one of my predecessors consulted with Public Service Commission and came up with the requirements for turbines with a total height of over 400 feet, that the area of potential effect that needs to be surveyed for indirect effects is 2 miles from the turbine. So typically it looks like a big cloud, you know, because it overlaps with everything. The level of effort for indirect effects is what we call a class 2. So class 3 is where you literally have to go on the ground for every area, what's going to be impacted, plus a buffer. The class 2, you can start with your tabletop and your desktop reviews. What it does for a class 2 architectural survey is the first thing they'll want to do is look at the zone, how many properties exist with extant above ground features. Then the second thing you do is you look at historic aerials and be like, okay, how many of them are actually over 50 years old? Well, 45, actually, excuse me. We use 45 because these projects take a number of years typically. So how many are over 45? If they're not over 45, you write them off in the summary saying, you know, of the, I'm going to make up numbers here, of the 100 properties, 75 of them are less than 45. So then the other 25 you look at, has it substantially changed? Like you can tell on aerial photos if things have been enlarged a lot, cut in half, a bunch new built, as well as a lot on the mapping service in Google Street View. You can take a look at those and be like, no, these are definitely not going to be eligible for the historic registry because of all the changes we can readily see. So that would then be another summary. Okay, of the 25, there's another 15 that would not need it, we can tell right away. So then the other 10, those are the ones you would physically go out, take the photographs, and submit more detailed information as to why it is or is not eligible for one of the registers. If it is eligible, that's where we start talking about the effects of the wind farm on that property. So if they're not potentially eligible, it's no adverse effect, and there's no worries. It's when they are potentially eligible, we start looking a little deeper, you know, how much can you actually see from this property? But we get all of that from the survey report. And what we asked for in the repowers was not to redo the entire 2 miles, just to do that additional mile from the increased height.
Can I ask a couple of questions, follow-up? Is that okay?
Yes, you can, but I just want to give clarity, too. You said that your predecessor would put someone here on this concept of, as I understood, if it's 400 feet or less, it's a mile. Mm-hmm. If more than 400 feet, it's 2 miles.
Correct.
And so is that just something that was kind of a concept that those two people came up with, or is that in the administrative rules?
That distance, the 1 mile is not in administrative rules, nor is the 2 mile in administrative rules. It falls under the practices of the historic preservation field. The 2 mile was negotiated between the Public Service Commission representative and my predecessor based on some of these got built with just the 1 mile, which yours originally would have. And once people could actually see, we have photographs showing it is a significant visual difference between 1 mile and 2 mile on the large towers, and that's where they came up with it. The photographs I have for good examples, it looks like Victor brought my example from last week. That's the Stanley R. Mickelson Safeguard Complex. That pyramid is 80 feet tall. In one image, I edited them out so you could see what it would have looked like before. The other, of the color photos that are really blue, those ones are approximately 2 miles away. I think,
that's
hopefully,
minutes.
Nope, that's 1 mile. The blue one is 2 miles. You can see there's a significant difference.
Oh.
And that's how they came up with 2 miles being the reasonable distance I've seen.
Would it be all right if we look just so we know what we're looking at as well?
So you said it's not an administrative rule. You said it's the preservation.
It's based on the historic preservation field and practices.
The guidelines that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, the guidelines.
They're in that guidelines.
Oh. Yeah, it
those
is
are published,
in the guidelines.
You said.
Our guidelines are published. Yes.
On your website?
Yes. And that was first published in 2016.
So which wind farm is this?
I don't recall the name.
And which county?
That is Nakoma, so that is Cavalier County.
Oh, yeah.
Langdon is near there.
So it's not Langdon, but it's near this location?
I didn't cross-reference if that's exactly, but I don't believe that is, because that one is a very well-established. It's been eligible since the 1990s, recognized when it was only 25, which is a big deal. Typically, you start looking at the 45 and 50 year, but that was formally recognized by the federal government when it was only 25 years old.
And on this project, there wasn't an architectural history survey done when it was constructed because there was no requirement. And I use that loosely. There isn't technically a requirement since there isn't a federal nexus. So it's just meeting the commission's requirements for history. So I think one issue may be that, you know, you talked about the incremental difference, but here there was no study to begin with. So I think understanding what you're looking for in this instance would be helpful.
So I think we do list it as SHPO, but we use those guidelines. Our published guidelines are applicable to both state and federal projects.
I think the difference would be there's not like a technical regulation that requires this. This is a recommended practice. Is that, am I saying that appropriately? There's not a statute or a rule that requires it.
As far as the distance, no, there are statutes saying that the PSC must consider cultural resources.
Correct.
And that's where that comes in, because they're trying to cover all the bases. So there's no place that I've seen in any of this state century code or administrative code where it gives the actual distances or the levels of effort. That's historically been left to the professional judgment of our professionals.
And at one time, so when this project was built, there wasn't an architectural history survey required. There was just a class 3 field survey for cultural resources. So here now, this would be a new requirement for this project. What is it that you're looking for this project, which doesn't have a class 2 to begin with?
Okay, then we would still, dry throat.
Sure.
Ideally, it would be the full 2 miles then. However, because of our stance on this is the additional height, it would just be from the 1 to the 2 mile.
Okay. And I guess I want to confirm with commissions that that's also acceptable to you if that's the stance of the State Historical Society, so that we understand what we're supposed to be using as a guide.
I'm interested, not that it's the only issue, but I am interested in knowing if the kind of quote you got from your vendor was for the full 2 mile thing, or was it just the additional 2 mile? Do they understand it's mostly a desktop exercise? I guess I think there's a lot of potential areas for misunderstanding there in what you got quoted. So that would be my first thing. And then I think the second thing is we haven't had a chance to really talk about this as a commission, so I think we'd want to weigh some of that information and come back and be able to think about it separately and visit about it to get back to you. I wouldn't want to give you an opinion right now.
And I think for us, we would like to understand what we're supposed to do and go get the correct quote, because I'm not sure that we have that at this point. So if the idea is the incremental difference because it wasn't previously required, which I do think that makes sense because this has been in place and operating for several years, so the increment makes sense. I think then we need to go back to the consultant and make sure that what was just outlined by Lorna and that 1 mile increment is what's covered in the quote.
Yeah.
So this gets to what we're talking about, but how big of an area is covered by these 33 turbines? Are they mostly pretty tight together, or are they a long ways apart?
I think if you look at what is sheet 6 or slide 6, that shows the layout, and you can kind of see the sections there and how many sections are affected by the project. And then you'd be going 2 miles, as I understand it, you'd be going between the 1 mile and the 2 mile mark from each of the turbines to do the analysis. And I think one question along those lines is, you said taking pictures, is that just from public, because these would be not participating landowners?
Correct. Yep. For non-participating, it's from the right of way.
Okay. So understanding that it would just be from the right-of-way, and I assume if it's inaccessible, they would note that it was inaccessible at that point and just use aerial photography or whatever was available. Okay. So I think that's what we would be looking at to make sure that that's what we have a quote for.
A lot of these are pretty tight together, so when it's 1 mile or two, it's going to get a lot of that acreage into the same acreage. So.
Just to
to point out, we will have, I mean, we'll have this, we've had the same conversation with the Langdon.
Yes.
So we want to make sure that we're looking Langdon. We've got this Laverne one with 33 turbines, and then the Ashtabula one and Ashtabula three. A decision on the appropriate path forward here will impact all four sites.
Yeah,
and others.
Correct. Yeah, none of those four had architectural history surveys when they were permitted.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your guys' clarification on this and ongoing engagement and working with us and the companies. And I think that if you guys could, now that you know kind of what the ask is, get an updated quote so we know sort of where that falls in the range of cost. And then I think it's important for all for us, and we'll talk to Jack to see, come up with a good policy. I really do try to personally defer to the agencies whenever possible, unless we think it's, in my opinion, an extreme request. So,
may I ask one follow-up that I think would help in your discussion? If there is an eligible or a potentially eligible site, what is then the next step as far as mitigation? Because I think everyone's concern is just ensuring that there can be continued operations, which that should be in place, and we assume that wouldn't change, but also that the upgrades could go forward because there's a lot of investments being made and decisions being made, so they need to know that everything will be able to move forward. So what would mitigation look like?
So typically we need it to be commensurate with whatever the impact is. So if this is one in that outer mile where it's very, very visible, like you can't get away from it, you know, that's a greater impact than there's only one visible from this particular site. So that gets weighed in. It's somewhat subjective negotiation in between. There's been, the vast majority choose to mitigate rather than say, okay, I'm just not going to do that one. But that would be the company's choice to say, no, we want to pursue mitigation, or we'll just alter the plan a little bit. When we look at the mitigation, there's a couple ways we can do it. And I'll talk about some upcoming new wind farm projects, since that's several that I've done recently. One of them had two properties that were eligible. One of the landowners wanted physical work done on the building, needs a new roof. It's not fully through the gamut yet. They're still talking with the landowner and going to get quotes to see if that the quote would fit with reasonable mitigation efforts. The other one, the gentleman knows he's retiring in 3 years and says he knows who he's selling it to, and they're going to tear everything down. That's private, not anything to do with the company. So he said, I do not want physical work. What they're going to do for that one is an oral history collection. So they're going to go and interview him. They'll write it down on paper, as well as whether the gentleman's okay with just audio or video, and then that'll get donated to the state archives. There's another one up near the town of Niagara that is right in the middle of a really nice collective of barns, but rather than try to mitigate each barn individually, and the town's also in that, they're going to do a town history, because that particular town never had one. There's a lot of them that did, especially in the 70s and 80s for centennial type projects. So they're going to write a town history, but they're going to include the element of there's all these cool barns. This is the ethnic groups that built these different types of barns and who lived here, rather than just the family histories that you see sometimes in those books. So we do offer something that we want it to be meaningful mitigation to the community that's going to feel the impacts. So it's not set in stone but that would be something that we would negotiate.
Okay. And so ultimately, you has always been a path forward that allowed mitigation and the project to move forward.
Correct.
Okay.
I'm glad you asked that question, Molly, because we had talked about some of that in our meeting last week, and I thought they have some pretty creative, meaningful approaches that seem fairly reasonable.
Yeah.
And if I was a wind developer, I'd kind of be happy to tout some of those things as well. Like, you know, we do try to address our impacts, and there's creative ways to do that. So,
and I would just throw out, with the new mitigation legislation, it will be important to get this kind of stuff worked into the rules that are developed. So I think that's a consideration for everyone. So, thank you. I didn't have anything else. Just so we'll plan that we will take back to outside of this hearing, we'll take back and the information we've got and see what quote we get from the consultant, and then we can bring that information to you. We can probably submit that as a supplemental filing after we have that information available, and then we can get your direction on how to move forward on that piece of it.
If we could, so since there's four different projects going on, if we could have a filing that addresses, it doesn't have to be a separate filing for each one, but if we can have something that separates out, here's the cost by project.
Yes.
And then we can make sure that gets filed in all four dockets.
Yep.
And then after that's submitted, the commission can kind of get back together for a work session on this and decide what they would like to see.
That's a good point. If we set kind of a standard, and some of these are pretty tight together, it seems like going from the difference between the eighth grade, if you were just looking at one thing somewhere, the second mile is a whole lot more acres than the first mile, obviously. But when they're tightly together like this, I don't know that it's going to be all that impactful. But if we set that as kind of our norm, and then the next one we're much farther apart, it would make a lot different situation. So it would be good to look at all of them right away.
I did have just one other question, and that was when you guys do these repowering, how do you look at the impacts, or do you have to restudy or look at impacts to wildlife for the longer blades? Is there any impact there that you deal with?
We did look in terms of, you know, T&E species, so we would have pulled the current threatened and endangered species list and if there's any habitat in the area, and all of that is referenced in the Exhibit A. There isn't any, and we would have looked at any sort of effects on any currently listed species, and those are addressed in Exhibit A as well. The others are just more general, and it's not really, there's not really any other impacts other than you would have from general maintenance of a wind farm.
So the longer blades don't have additional impact to the birds and the bats, etc.
So one thing that's come out is our wildlife conservation strategy that we've worked through with it, and we don't see the impacts to that right now, but the wildlife conservation strategy provides the formula for addressing and continuing to monitor, and those are things that we've brought in-house and are developing as part of the overall project.
So it's adaptable. A lot of the original projects didn't necessarily have those in place other than the generic, so this is being developed so it can be monitored going forward, and then you can have adaptive management if there is an issue. Given what we're seeing on the other projects, I would be surprised that if there would be.
All right. I think that was it.
Good.
Let me just quick double check this part. Yep, that's good. Thank you.
You have any questions or comments?
No, I just have a comment. I really appreciated your figure 3-1, the common indoor sound, the sound pressure, the comparison, indoor, outdoor. It was realistic. I mean, something for me to really connect with.
We would like to take credit, but we'll tell Epsilon they did a good job.
I was just curious if you could add husband who's hard of hearing and has TV loud.
What's that?
What's the deal?
I did laugh. I mean, I was looking at that, and I'm like, where would that fall? So maybe if they can add that to that.
Victor, Rob, or Chris, did you have anything else? Okay, is there any objection to the information that's been provided today? And I'm talking about both the oral discussion that's on the recording as well as the slides becoming part of the official record upon which we make a decision?
No.
No objection from staff.
Okay. See, none of the evidence that we've acquired today will become part of the official record upon which we make a decision. With that, this informal hearing is closed. Thank you, everyone, for being here.
Thank you
guys for being here.
Thanks.